Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Robert, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Robert.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. I should check mine. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving about the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a clear set of directions on precisely how to recover from illness to alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA's not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight, which I don't actually remember. Which one are we on?
10.
And I'll begin with reading a paragraph out of the big book. Step 10, page 84. This thought brings us to step 10 is how it starts, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And David.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David. Grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. So here we are at step 10, into the growth and living steps. We've come a long way. And I think about the journey that it took to start to approach this thing. I'm a reluctant member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not somebody who got here and felt like he found his family, felt like he was home at last, and this was definitely the place for me to be. You know, I got here for the first time. I was 22 years old, and I was very physically ill, very near death at that time, but I still was impressed with running the show. I still had my own ideas about the way I was going to run my drinking and my show, and you guys seemed to suggest that it wasn't up to me whether I drank or not. It wasn't that I was apparently powerless over this, and that was just abhorrent to me. And So I spent the, they put it more simply than that. They just said, look, if you're an alcoholic, David, once you stop, you can't stay stopped. And once you start, you can't stop. And I took all that under advisement. You know, I'm going to try to work that out, you know. So I tried to move all the pieces around, move the chemicals, the days of the week, eliminate certain things, certain places, certain times. I did all that stuff. And eventually, 6 years later, I was 6 months abstinent of alcohol and driving around the city of Norfolk looking for buildings to jump off of, because I knew two things. I knew that I did not want to drink anymore. I desperately did not want to go through the pain and the remorse and the shame and the guilt and the lies and the things I was capable of saying and doing under the influence of alcohol. I had absolutely lost the idea that it was going to be any different. You know, I'd run out of lies to tell myself that it was going to be different. And I knew that I was going to drink again. I knew I was going to drink again. So I ran all that through my computer upstairs, and it said, why don't you just end it all? So, you know, as you're driving around selecting buildings, you know, you got to think about the height of them. Like, if it's not high enough, you know, you might be really unlucky and live through that. And if it's too high, you might have to experience the fact that you were wrong for some period of time. And I don't know. These were my meditations. These are the things that I was thinking about. And this is basically David running David's life and doing this stuff. So I came here in that mode. I didn't have a drinking problem when I got here. You know, drink was far away, 6 months away anyway. But it was right around the corner, too, in my mind. So that's what it's like to be me. So I come here, and I basically took the suggestions of the simple actions that you guys described, is getting a sponsor, getting a home group. You guys made those first steps very simple to me. Those first three steps, David, or I can't, he can. I think I'll try to let him by doing the rest of the steps. Very quickly, I'm in an inventory. Very quickly, I see things that I've never seen before about me, like right in that fear inventory. My number one fear is a fear of being alone. And my number two fear is a fear of people. And I looked at that in black and white, and I thought, geez, no wonder I need chemicals to get along in the world. This is starting to make sense, that there's more wrong with me than drinking. You guys told me that wasn't really my problem. And I had to experience that many, many times. So we vigorously go on. I get through that first fifth step, go back in prayer to the Father. Next thing I know, I'm knocking on doors. I'm repairing relationships with my parents, my coworkers, my employees, my family, my friends, and life starts getting pretty good. I'm starting to make some friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. So there's a lot of momentum behind me as we approach step 10. So, and I always think of, this is kind of silly, but I mean, I always think about like the original guys when they had that six-step program, the absolute reliance and admission of defeat and reliance upon God and confession and restitution and helpfulness to others. When they had that program, it was almost like continuing to do that was an afterthought, you know? Like, I'm just imagining the first 100. I don't know if any of this is true. This is just my mind. But I'm imagining these guys, like, I'm 3 years sober, and I'm still cheating on my wife. I'm 4 years sober, and I'm stealing at work, you know? Perhaps I should continue to take personal inventory, and maybe I'm the only one. So... But anyway, it talks about, it just says we continue. It just suggests that we continue to take this inventory and continue to set right new mistakes as we go along when we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We've entered the world of the Spirit. We've just kind of walked through the door, just kind of gotten into the arena. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So, and he warns me that this is not an overnight matter. So he uses some things there, vigorously. Way of living. So, and this function of growing and understanding. None of that to me sounds like maintenance. That sounds like growth. That sounds like change. That sounds like a continuation of the things that we've been doing. And what was pointed out to me was it basically says keep doing 4 through 9 on your daily life, David. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. We found those in the fourth step. And when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. It sounds like step 6 and 7, and we discuss them with somebody immediately. That sounds like step 5, and make amends quickly. Sounds like step 9 if we've harmed anyone. But then he tells me to do something really interesting. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So again, it's all through the book, and what people have always, you know, brought in front of me, that this whole thing is here to help other people. We're here to have this experience, not to hog it for ourselves, but to turn around and be loving and in service to somebody else. And that looks different to everybody, but I think we all know what those things are, what loving is and what service is, and what our job is to do here. So this is a daily walking around game plan for my life. And I'll say one more thing about it and I'll shut up. But it's very easy for me to see, today it's easy for me to see where I'm being selfish. It's very easy to see for me when I'm being dishonest. Resentments are fairly obvious to me. I know what they feel like, fairly intense. The fear remains subtle for me. And fear is probably the main thread in my life. All my life I've been scared to death of people and of being by myself, that you won't like me, that I'm not going to get enough, it's not going to go my way, she's going to leave, she's going to stay. You know, I mean, I'm just scared to death of all these things. So, and when I think about that fear of being alone, it's not like I'm not happy in my own company, because I'm a piddler. I like doing little projects. I'm happy in my own company. But when I think of alone, I think of forsaken, friendless, without pity, without resource, without any kind of, without a friend, you know? And so those are the fears that are sort of ambient with me. They're just with me kind of all the time. And I was talking to a friend about it today, and I just don't see it. I'm not often in touch with it. It's very hard for me to get in touch with the fear that I have on a daily basis. But I've got a tool for that. Phyllis?
Thank you. It's really good. I'm Phyllis. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Phyllis.
I have no idea how to follow this at all, but we'll just start talking. So let's see. Qualify just a little. Do like what some folks do where my sponsor is. My sobriety date is April 15th, 1982. My home group is Fellowship of the Spirit, where we meet in Gloucester at Abingdon Church, and we have three meetings a week. We have on Wednesday, we have a beginner meeting at 7. We have an 8 o'clock big book study, and on Saturday we have a speaker meeting. And a couple of folks from here, can you hear me in the back? All right, okay, raised hand, all right. So let's see, speaker meeting on Saturday nights at 8. So some of you may wind up there if you haven't yet, so watch out. I have my pen and or my cell phone to get your number. In fact, I'm getting speakers for April, so help me out. All right, so back to the situation. All right, so let's see. I, like you, David, was not thrilled to be in AA, and I stayed a little while, and I went out and came back, and I went out, and I went to what I thought was kind of like a higher list. It's like AA is all good, but maybe let's take who I am and what I want, and let's distill that down into, I don't have to mix with all the rabble of it. I'll just find the pure essence of, you know, all these people that are doing what I think I need to do and go hang out with them. It's a spiritual thing, it's not AA, but it's a, you know, kind of, so I went to these like growth seminars where a lot of people seemed like they were just one notch up of aspiration somehow, in my mind. So I was there for 2 years and knew I was an alcoholic, so did not drink. But I was beginning to notice that while there were all these workshops and all these kind of like things that could help you grow, that I wasn't really growing. I was not drinking, but I wasn't growing. So what was my problem? Well, I was more, you know, I wasn't really thinking of methods yet, but I was there with the suicide thing. And my finances were in disarray, and I was very embarrassed about it, and I didn't want to talk to anybody about how to fix that. And I became suicidal over that particular worry, among others. The last boyfriend had kicked me out, so I started going back to AA. And eventually got the sponsor, got the home group. The people that had kind of annoyed me now began to make sense to me, and even the meetings that I was warned against that were more structured seemed like, gosh, put my pack down and relax. You know, I've got some people that can help me here, get the sponsor, do the steps, told the sponsor about the problem. And I'd called suicide prevention, by the way, and I swear to God, excuse me, they put me on hold. Na 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 na, you know, elevator music. And anyway, so they came on the line. They said something like, well, you know, you should probably go talk to the people that you have the problem with and maybe you can work out a solution. And I said, okay, well, thank you very much. And I thought, I mean, I didn't have the words for it, but essentially, if I had the power to do that, I would. But my problem is I don't have the power. So somewhere in there, not too long after that, I wound up in this group where I'd heard someone speak. Some of you know who it is, Clancy. And there was something about what he was talking about that struck me inside, because he didn't feel like he was an alcoholic like other people were. He was this different kind of alcoholic, where something was deeper, more wrong, more something. And I don't know, I just identified with that. So simple actions were taken. I had a kind of a journey with doing the steps a number of different ways, getting very involved in service. And at about 10 years of sobriety, this is sort of the historic aspect of my sobriety. In my home group, someone came to the group who had done the steps a little more thoroughly in terms of using the book, every page of the book, and kind of talking it over in somewhat the way that we're doing here. And my sponsor asked me if I was interested in doing that. I'd actually heard of that a couple of years before, and it sounded to me a little bit like those people that are both vegan and a triathlete. You know, like, gosh, that's so nice for you. Seems a little extreme, you know. You could even hurt yourself. You know, just looking at all these pages, you know, gosh. Anyway, but after a couple of years of my sponsor offering it to me, it sounded pretty good by then. One of the big transformations that happened for me, I'll kind of shortcut it. David explained it so beautifully. But in the midst of my fourth step, I'd had a resentment against my mother that I wasn't even aware of for practically as long as I could remember. And what we accomplished in the fifth step was this kind of reorienting. You know, it talks in the book about how the roots grasped a new soil. And for me, it was that, you know, and I think fear, I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but for me, fear is like everything I think I know, and I act on everything I think I know, but most of what I think I know is wrong, you know? And so what I was thinking about my mother and why it was and why I had to, like, withhold from her and make her keep guessing about where I was and what I was doing and make her worry about me and call me because she didn't love me like the other kids and na-na-na. So we're in there, and we're, you know, the resentments, the fear, and it became like, you know, really, who is my source? Is it this parent who did the best they could? Is that what makes me, does that person have to meet my little puny standards of behavior for me to be okay? Or can I be okay no matter what other people do? Because after all, what is my source? You know, the whole point of all this is to have an experience with a power greater than myself that was why I couldn't call those people and make things right with them, which, by the way, with the urging of a sponsor, I did. And so before killing yourself, you might, you know, try that, like, you know, actually go negotiate with the people. And someone had some money they could loan me until I could sell this property and pay off the debt. And it happened like that in a phone call. A phone call. That was what it took. So death or reconciliation, you know, like, you ever seen that video, Cake or Death? It was like, look it up, Cake or Death. And nobody's laughing. All right, ask me about it afterwards. He's got an accent, Cake or Death. Anyway, so, but you know, we're like that. So, but that was years before. So now I'm in this inventory, and our purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people around us. So how do I take that into my family? Well, my mother had raised this child that I didn't really know, who was the child of one of my stepsisters. And she was around, but I really didn't know her that well. My mother was in the middle. So my job is to, unlike some of the other siblings along with me, where we'd kind of been like, well, what about the other grandkids? Well, what about, you know, and she's giving her more to, you know, it's like, that's like the pie approach. You know, like there's this much love, and you know those pie charts, like the orange piece is mine and the gold piece is yours and the green one is his, and are they all the same? Or do I deserve more maybe, you know? So we took that pie and we sort of erased that and we turned me, and this is my metaphor now, but this is how I imagine it now. Like I am not about getting pie. I am about getting the source of love from a higher power, and I'm like a artesian well of love out, 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 into that. And so I'm grateful for this young person who has given my mother so much joy. And to this day, you know, like now I joke with my mom, when you were changing her diapers, you didn't know you were going to wind up living with her, did you? Which is what where she is now. My mother lives with this kid. And it's wonderful. Kids turned out great. But anyway, so back to the deal. So I started calling my mom, and I still do, regularly. She doesn't have to call me. She doesn't have to do anything at all. And so it was my barrier, not hers. And so we're now kind of like Forrest Gump. We're like peas and carrots. You know, she's my buddy. Now, I became sold on these ideas based on that, among other things. And I can be pretty sold on them with a lot of folks. But in talking about the rest of this, okay, so part of my amends, again, the calling, and there's lots of other, but the whole point with this step 10 business here, it says this thought brings to step 10 that I was thinking about is I am now, like it says, in the world of the spirit. So having all those things before this make it possible for me to be in this world of the spirit. Because before that, it's all about me, my fear, me, 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 what do I get? Now I'm here to be of service to other people. So, of course, I'm not going to have this down pat. I'm going to suffer the pangs of getting along with other folks. Who was the philosopher that said hell is other people? Not literally, but the point is, everything's fine until I have a roommate, right? Or everything's fine until I have coworkers. So, you know, and there have been days at work where I literally was either going to rage or cry or something. You know, I felt like I was going to explode. So I had this little hallway at work with a window, and I could look out, and I could do this in my little hallway, and then go back and, you know, say I'm sorry if I needed to, or just more importantly, just sort of recalibrate. It doesn't matter what I thought they meant by what they said or any of that. You know, just what would a sane, normal, responsible, loving, kind team member do, and just do that, even if I didn't feel like doing it, even if it seemed futile, you know, just keep doing that. So this makes that destroying my life through fear and anger less likely. I will, you know, I might not feel right, but I will act right, and then my life won't come to dust around me because I've acted on my impulses instead of these actions here. So part of asking God to remove them is just a little willingness to act even when I don't feel like it. Discussing if I have to, if I need to. Calling. Sometimes it takes a little phone call before I can do all that. And resolutely turning our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I just had a little conversation on Sunday with someone about the world's religions having this as a theme. And we were talking in the car about how it starts with us and it starts at home. And this is a good track for that. You know, then we can carry that out into all of our affairs. And I'm done.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. The next paragraph is page 84 again, and it begins with, "And we have ceased." And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we will recoil as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. This is a miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky, nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
Yeah. You know, on a practical thing, on the prior paragraph, one of the things, and it's not in the book anywhere, but in our sponsorship line, the guys that I work with, we make it a little goal to talk to 3 alcoholics every day on the telephone. And there's, you're not going to find that in the literature anywhere, but that's just something that we do. And I really do find that a lot of this 10-step stuff will happen in that environment, talking to other people. You're going to find out, you know, about your resentments, about your fears, about, and then you're going to get the opportunity to be concerned about somebody else, and maybe even realize that that's why you're there. Maybe you can help somebody else out. So that I find the telephone to be a very practical piece and a real living 10-step process on a daily basis. So we've ceased fighting anyone or anything. You know, I was just thinking about it because I would describe myself as I love to fight. I love an argument. I love to debate. I mean, we go back to my third grade teacher saying, you, David, should think about being an attorney. And I swelled with pride thinking that she was complimenting me. I had no idea. She was like, you are a real pain in the butt. And I was thinking about describing myself that way. And the truth is, as I sit here today, I really don't love a fight. I really don't love an argument. Somewhere along the way, that's flipped. I won't stand and take a beating either, but I don't enjoy it. So in some sense, I don't know if I've ceased fighting anyone or anything, but I do not battle with alcohol today. And I am not as argumentative with human beings as I used to be. Mostly because I've just been so darn wrong most of the time, too. It says sanity will have returned, that we'll seldom be interested in liquor. And I would hear these things when I first came around, and that was all theoretical to me. It made, you know, no sense. All my life, all I really wanted to do was get fallen down drunk. And I don't know about y'all, but I'm not interested in a warm glow or a little social lubricant. I'm interested in getting tore up from the floor up. I want to get fallen down. I want to get regrettably drunk. That's the way I like drinking, and that's what drinking's going to be for me. So I essentially, you know, as has been described, submitted to this process sort of against my own better judgment. You know, I had no frame of reference that this would work other than your living example. And I'd heard your stories, you told your stories, and I got to sit there enough and say, I think like that. I felt like that. Maybe if I do what they do, I'll get what they've got. And I start to go along and I notice. Like when in the beginning, I can remember being afraid to go by 7-Eleven, afraid to go in and get cigarettes. Because I was just thinking that something would snap in me, and I'd end up with a 12-pack, and half of it would be in me before I even knew what I was doing. I mean, these are the kind of things I was afraid of. And then I notice that that's not happening. I notice over time that I'm not interested in alcohol. It's not a fight. Graham and some other guys. There's just a few of us, but we have the privilege of taking the. Taking a meeting up to the 8th floor of the Norfolk City Jail. And there's guys in there from 18 to 88. And we get upwards of like 20 men in there. And they're mostly different. It's a kind of a transient thing. But they've all got one thing in common. They've got a plan. They all have a plan. They're gonna get out and go to church, and they're gonna not go this way, and they're gonna join the gym, and they're gonna get another job, and they're gonna do this, and they got all this do right plans, you know. And it's like, and what am I gonna do? I'm gonna sit there and say, well, that's a fantasy, you know. But I can tell my story, you know. I had all those things. I had all those management styles, you know. I went to the psychiatrist, and I lied to him because you can't. You can't tell those people how much you really drink. I don't know if you know this or not. It'll freak them out. If you tell a healthcare professional how much you really drink, they'll give you the opportunity to recast your story. They're like, you say, is that weekly? Or Daily. No, daily, yeah. Every day? So the gym membership didn't do it, the new town didn't do it, you know, the diet, the new diet, the exercise. I called my sister one time and I said, I figured it out. She goes, what? And I said, vitamins. She goes, you're crazy. I'm like, you're an idiot. I hung up the phone and I've got a blender of brewer's yeast and baby spinach and rum. And it really did make me feel better when I drank it. All those things. I tried all those things and I couldn't manage it. But now I'm this idea of being placed in a position of neutrality, of not fighting it. It's like alcohol is not even an issue anymore, you know? It's like if you take anything that you don't have a problem with, like I'm not frightened of wicker, and you know, and there's wicker and there's the booze and maybe there's some, you know, they're about the same thing to me. I'm not worried about them. I'm not thinking about them. I don't have to manage it. And the thing that it says that's amazing to me is that I didn't do that. I just noticed it. You know, I just did what you guys told me to do. And I noticed, I found myself in that condition. So there's obviously no great intellectual requirement for this thing, because I don't bring it. I never could. I did everything I could think of to do to solve the problem, and it was not enough. And yet there it is. So, not fighting it. I spent so much time fighting it. I don't know about anybody else in the room, but I did almost a year sober, without AA. I mean, or dry, however you want to phrase that. But if you've ever done any lengths of time sober, without the solution, without a fellowship of people around you, that's what it feels like. It feels like doing time. It feels like it's painful. It's lonely. It's miserable. It's sad. And I'm just crispy, you know, just crunchy all the time, and I got no relief. And I'm just fighting it. It's all willpower. I cannot drink for a while on willpower. I can do it. I don't like it, you know. But I'm not looking for that. What you guys seem to be offering me is freedom from that. This problem could be solved, David, if you come this way and do this thing. I used to feel that way. I don't feel that way anymore. Come do what I did. Okay. So we find ourselves there, neutral, safe, protected. The problem has been removed. It does not exist. I'm not worried about alcohol. I'm not cured, though. But we'll talk about that in the next paragraph. But that's an amazing thing. I mean, that's... If you think about it, like all our lives, we've sought relief, chemical relief, relief in a bottle, relief in sex, relief in whatever, just a temporary escape from the feelings that are so untenable to just live inside my own skin. I just want relief. And alcohol does a really good job of that until it stops doing that. But this is a solution, not relief. You know, it's a real solution. The problem goes away.
To say I'm Phyllis. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Phyllis.
Okay, that was really good. I'm thinking of something that I heard someone say in a talk, that we're kind of like a shoe store with one pair of shoes. That's all we have. And I think this might be it. You know, the fact that through spiritual actions, we have this thinking that otherwise is going to always prevail. There's no willpower that can fight the thinking that tells me that it's okay to drink. There is none if one is an alcoholic of this type. And so what we have is the magic that solves that problem. And this describes it in this paragraph. So it talks about it just comes without any thought or effort on our part. And as David explained, it's not that we're not doing anything. We're doing lots of stuff, but we're not fighting the actual desire to drink. We're not directly attacking the problem. We've tried that. That didn't work. So what we have is a awakening that happens, and there's a relief of that obsession to drink. There are several places in the book that talk about it, you know, after the fifth step, reading the fifth step for one, but it's very well described here. So, you know, many of us have had the experience of talking to new people, and like David was describing, there's lots of plans, lots of ways, lots of ideas about, you know, before they've had a chance for to kind of hear a lot of what we're doing here, you know, like, well, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to make sure none of my triggers happen, and I'm going to, you know, it's like there's all this management going on. And eventually, in sobriety, all the management techniques tend to lead to more pain, or else lead to going back to drinking, or, you know, there's lots of suffering that can happen in sobriety from old habits. And then we return to what does work, working the steps. I kind of get a visual here of, it's a way of, I'm not fighting the actual problem. And there was another way of saying it. The answer is not in the problem. The answer is in the answer. So it's like, here's the problem over here. So I'm taking my actions over here, doing what I can do with folks guiding me in this process that we have. And if I will actually do it, I will get this result that's described here. And I don't think I have anything else to say about that. I'll pass.
Thanks, Phyllis. Mm-hmm. And David. Page 85 is the last paragraph. It is easy to let up on. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. He says it's easy. That must mean it's not difficult. For years when I read this, I thought resting on your laurels was just a fancy way of saying sitting on your butt. But laurels are, I guess, when the returning armies, generals would return from vanquishing the whatever enemy. Thank you. They would shower them in these laurels, and then so they would accumulate these laurels. Now I can rest on this bed of laurels. And so it's just a sort of a poetic way of saying resting on my past achievements. And I really would love to stay sober today on what I did for Alcoholics Anonymous last week. I worked really hard in AA last week. I've been kind of phoning it in all day. But last week doesn't seem like I can put anything in the bank spiritually. You know, it's like this spiritual bucket has a hole in the bottom of it, you know. It leaks out a little slower than it accumulates, but it will drain. So it says we're heading for trouble if we do. Alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. And I'll tell you in my experience how I profoundly experienced that in a lot of little ways. But the big one is that I described what it was like getting here. When I came here, and I worked very hard in AA for about 5 or 6 years, once it finally stuck. And I was a member of a home group. I had a sponsor. I worked the steps. I was working with other men. I was in service positions. I went, you know, out of town to conferences and things like that. I got busy in AA, and sure enough, the finances got better and the relationships got better. Everything got better. Everything got gooder and gooder and gooder. just like you guys said it would. And so what I could have done, had I been a different person other than me, would be recognize the gift that had been given me and have gratitude for it and continue to try to help out. But somewhere along the way, I just said, you know what? Time for me to do my thing. I found the worst, actually that's a misrepresentation, because none of this was a decision. I didn't make a decision to stop or to rest on my laurels or any of that. I just slowly leaked away. I found it's calamity is better for my recovery than prosperity. You know, when calamity's on, I'm like in conscious contact with God all the time. I'm praying, I'm on the phone, I'm reading the literature, man, I am busy. But when the bank account's good and when mama's happy and everything's going good, you know, I mean, I can just kick back. I don't need to work that hard. Let some of the young guys take care of this thing. So what happened to me was everything I ever wanted out of life basically came my way, and I just leaked out of AA. Not a decision, not a walking away. I never disavowed my alcoholism. I never thought it'd be a good idea to drink. I never thought AA was wrong. I never thought it wasn't right for me. I just started going to fewer and fewer meetings, fewer and fewer meetings. And eventually I was going to no meetings. But I'm not cured of alcoholism. And alcohol is a subtle foe. What got my attention, 14 years abstinent of alcohol, the business that had come to me in sobriety was failing. The marriage that had come to me in sobriety was failing. Mama had a boyfriend and was inviting me to leave. I'm like, well, how about I stay and you leave? No, you leave. So my children were indifferent to my comings and goings. I had become just hypercritical, absolutely grumpy all the time. Nothing you could do was good enough for me. And that's alcoholism, I found out. I was not aware of it at the time. So there I am, 14 years sober, resting on my past achievements, and I'm back to suicide again. Back to suicide. I still didn't want to drink. Still didn't want to use. Still didn't want to do any of that stuff. I knew that was going to be destruction and pain. So I came back to AA. Ta-da! And a very strange thing happens. I went back to the rooms where I got sober. I went back to West Ghent, and I went back to Candlelight. And I went back to see the kind of expecting to see the old crew there. And what I found was very strange. If there were 50 people in the room, I knew two of them. So that should tell you something. I mean, I'm sure everyone in here is going to stay sober for the rest of their lives. But on the whole, the numbers don't look good. And what's weird about that is the two people that are still in the room were people I didn't like in the first place. I don't know why they stick. No, I'm just joking. In case any of them are in here. So isn't that interesting? And it talks about what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And people love to talk about the spiritual condition. And I would just, what was pointed out to me was that maintenance was the word to pay attention to, was the doing of these actions was what to pay attention to, not paying attention to the goal or the problem, but to the answer. Let's do these things. Let's do these maintenance things that are very simple. We're saying some simple prayers. We're going to go to a meeting, pick up the phone, read some literature, try to stick our hand out and help somebody else today. These are the things that you guys taught me to do on a daily basis. Do I have a sponsor? Does he know I'm alive? You know, these are good questions to ask. And whenever I go through that little checklist, I'm usually in deficit somewhere. There's something in there that I can work on that day. So that's what was told to me to do for the maintenance on a daily basis. So people love to talk. If you go to open discussion meetings, you'll hear a lot about spiritual condition. You'll hear a lot about daily reprieves contingent on the maintenance of spiritual condition. And then he tells us in these last two sentences how to do that. And I don't hear too many people talking about it. But it says, every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. Really? How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm a fur piece from those being my constant thoughts. But it's certainly an invitation to practice. How can I serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. And then it tells me I can exercise my will, but that scares me to death. I don't even want to think about that. Phyllis?
Okay. Boy, I've had lots of hills and valleys along this line. I haven't quite quit going to meetings entirely. When I had my daughter, and she was young, I was pretty thin on meetings back then. Looking back, you know, I probably would have actually been more present in that time had I made the time to go to more meetings. It's that thing that can creep up, you know, like I'm so busy and there's so many responsibilities, and so that hour and a half or whatever it is, you know, I just can't even do that. And yet, you know, I'm wound tight, and I'm, you know, like David was describing, I'm getting grumpy. Everything means too much. You know, I have to have this thing. This thing has to go this way. That thing has to go that way. Even just traffic, just, you know, I find myself walking along just kind of like that general mood of nothing is right, and everything just kind of mildly ticks me off. Everything. You know, I'm kind of slamming the car door a little harder and just annoyed. Just, you know, nothing's up to my standards, and on and on. So when I somehow am brought up by, maybe a couple of times for me, it's been stress so unbearable that I thought my head was going to explode. And I thought, you know, this is no way to live. I could literally make myself sick. So anyway, we come back and restart on making these things more of a focus, and remembering there is nothing, like in the ABCs, my sponsor used to say to me, I had this big thing when I was in my first 5 or 6 years of sobriety, I had kind of a love obsession, and she would say to me, remember, Phyllis, no human power. Like, you know, it's not, you know, Joe, Jim, Billy, Bob, you know, it's no human power. And it's no thing, it's no money, it's no accomplishment, it's none of that. All those things are great, they're good goals, they are wonderful, but they have to kind of be held in a lightness, because anything that's in that world can and will change and be taken away, can and will, you know. So I need something that's much deeper than that to rely on. If I rely on how I look, you know, I was talking to my mom the other night. My daughter just moved to Minneapolis, and she'd been staying with us for a few months, and I really enjoyed it. And the night she left, she cooked up this thing with her dad that we would have this little photo shoot. And my husband, among other things, does some artwork. And so down in the basement is kind of the studio, and he has this big painting against the wall. And so she had all these little things, and she was enjoying having us pose in front of this and, you know, take a picture of her and us. And my hair, nothing. I'd prepared for this not at all. I was wearing an extremely unflattering sweater, you know. And I don't know, somehow I just looked at it and I went, well, that's what I look like. You know, that's really not me. And I'm not trying to brag. I definitely thought about how I look before I came here tonight. You know, it's not like I'm never going to do that. But I had a moment. And I was calling my mom and I said, you know, one thing I realized is, looking back at when I was newly sober and the photos of me then, you know, dang. But anyway, 20 years from now, I'll look at the photos of me now and think, yeah, you rock. You know, like, not bad. So all glory is fleeting. So how do I live with that? How do I accept that? You know, I have to have things that I'm doing on a regular basis to put me back in that mode of, you know, what's supposed to be here. You know, what am I supposed to be doing? And generally, it's whatever's in front of me, doing it without being hooked on how it's going to turn out, let it turn out the way it turns out, doing my utmost best to be of service. Which, you know, if I'm not in that mode, there's generally I'm afraid, you know, like what's going to happen if it doesn't go my way. I like what you said about, I think I would agree, one of my least conscious awarenesses is the fear. It's like, it says in the book that fear is like an evil and corroding thread shot through everything. I mean, if I can trust in a higher power that can be transformative, I don't have to hold on to, well, I'm just like that, or, well, you know, this is how things are. And my mind loves to tell me that, you know, like it's going to protect me from getting hurt by, you know, so don't do that because you might get rejected. Don't do that. It might be painful. Don't. But there are certain things that I might wish to do that are actually constructive and good. And if I'm listening to that thing, I'm not going to go do that. But if I'm going to do that, there's going to be some roar going on here. But I can, with trust and faith and my motivation not to get the result or else I'll be a failure, but more let me go ask to be of service and see if I am or I'm not, you know, and it's okay. If I'm trusting a higher power, then I can go out there and do that without it meaning you're bad, you're good, you're a failure, you're a success, you're a zero, you're a hero. You know, it's like it's just what it is. And this is my ideal, mind you. This is not how I am every minute. But I was watching this little video. I am in business, and this gentleman was, and I think to myself, I don't know, what's going on with this guy? Because he was doing this little talk about going and doing this particular kind of sales, and he said, now look, you're going to be afraid. So just before you talk to the people, just say to yourself, they might need my help. How can I just be of help to these people? And I thought, where have I heard that? So anyway, I've been reading this book that I'm sharing with my friend that's with me here, Winona. Her mother is she's a spiritual teacher is what she is, and always has been. And I'm lucky to be sharing some time with her. So we're reading this book, and it's about the world's religions and what they have in common. And one of the things that I was just reading was about how monks have these things that they say all the time, and that's common to all monks, it seems, of different, you know, like Christian monks, Buddhist monks, different monks. They have these things that they repeat, and it's a lot like what it says here. You know, thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts that go with us constantly, and so there are folks that make a practice of that. So, you know, they've been doing that for a long time, and it seems to work. I've tried a number of the things here that, you know, they work so well, I quit doing them for a while. that's the thing. But one of the things they say in meditation is if your thoughts drift off and you're supposed to be concentrating on your breathing, for example, just think of yourself like a little puppy that's being paper trained. You know, just bring yourself back to the paper. Don't, you know, like, this isn't in here, it's back a little further, or actually it's up ahead. Where is it? Yeah, I won't steal thunder from next week, but it's not good to beat yourself up, we'll just leave it at that. Just return to it. And I think I'm done.
Thank you.
That's great. Ooh, I can't see. Thank you. I was fascinated the whole time. Oh, well, we will pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements? Graham?
Yeah, this home group on April the 21st, which is a Monday night, it's in this room. We're having Subway and a speaker. So by that time, we'll have finished the 12 steps. We're on step 10 tonight. And this is like on the week after we finish the steps. The speaker's called Tom I. He's coming from Southern Pines, North Carolina. There's free food, a potluck supper at 6 o'clock. Feel free to bring a dish. And the speaker meeting is at 7 o'clock as usual, from 7 to 8. Everybody's welcome. There's flyers down there. If you want to take some flyers, help yourself. Thank you.
Thanks. Any other announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you. Just holler out your name.
I'm Javier.
Hey, Javier. Javier, welcome.
Point out literature is available right over there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor raise their hand? And if you have any questions about sponsorship, I believe it's still Graham and Catherine are going to be up here. Nobody's told me different, so they're elected tonight. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on Colonial and 22nd, right down the road. Does anyone want to read the last two paragraphs, page 164? Go ahead.
My name is Guy.
Hey, Guy.
I hope that you be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself. Is that right? Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny.
Thanks for reading. Stand up, join hands, and we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Thank you.